My heart must have skipped a beat. It was an amazing, a magical moment. I was 16 years old, and I was at Green Lake Bible Camp in southwest Minnesota. It was Thursday night, the last night that we were going to be there. We'd all gathered around the campfire, and I could see the cross, the wood cross, the big wood cross along the shore with the moonlit sky behind it. We were singing chorus after chorus. We were holding hands. Our counselor, my counselor, Scott Risdahl, who's now a medical doctor, was leading us in prayer. We were all joining in that prayer by offering our own petitions, our own prayers from our heart. It was a magical moment. It was as if the lapping of the waves upon the shore were keeping rhythm with the songs we were singing. And I just remember in that moment, never ever having before that time felt so close to Jesus. My heart was on fire. I mean, Wesley talks about having his heart strangely warmed, and I knew what that meant at that moment. I knew I was in the presence of God. God's presence was palpable. It was tangible. It was right there. And I remember holding on to that experience for years. I thought to myself, how good it is that we are here. And I'll tell you, I didn't want to leave. And many of us stayed around that campfire while others started to afterwards head up to their cabins. There was a good contingent of us that stayed around that fire for a long time. We had all been strangely moved. I don't know if it was Bible camp for you. You know, we can experience God at Bible camp. Maybe you had gone to a Bible camp or a Young Life camp or some kind of spiritual retreat and God became real for you. But maybe it wasn't a camp, because these kinds of things can happen in other places as well. Maybe it was a retreat that you were at, or a concert of some sort. Maybe it was a worship service, maybe at Christmas Eve or Easter time. The pastor was particularly inspiring. The music gave chills down your spine, and you just knew that you were somehow in the mystery and presence of God. And that was such a heartwarming experience for you. And you look back on that time, time and time again, wishing, desiring to have that same feeling in your heart renewed time and time again, because you don't want to get off that mountain. You want to stay there experiencing that. Sometimes it happens in a corporate setting, like at a campfire or a worship service or at a retreat or a concert. Sometimes it happens when we're alone, doesn't it? We can have this time of prayer or this place that we go. Maybe it's a time you sat and everything was just right. The stars in the sky, the sun setting, whatever it was for you. And God just seemed so real. Your prayers seemed so heartfelt. God was so real. And you just felt as though you were in the glory of God. And you thought to yourself, how good it is that I am here. Mountaintop experiences. There's nothing like them. And that's what we find in our gospel reading for today. Peter, James, and John go with Jesus to a mountaintop. They have a mountaintop experience. In fact, that's where the phrase comes from. It comes from this text. They're having an incredible experience of God. Now, let me just back up a little bit and give you a little context for this story. This is in chapter 9. In chapter 8, we find Jesus, again with his disciples, but he's in a very peculiar place. He's in a place called Caesarea Philippi. That may mean nothing to you, but Caesarea Philippi was a place in northeastern Israel, what is today the land of Israel, the country of Israel, that was a place, I guess what you'd call a place of pagan worship. There were lots of different gods, deities that were worshipped in that place. Gods and goddesses and all kinds of different religious practitioners were there, and they were all setting up their idols or their places of worship, and all these priests and priestesses were doing their thing, and Jesus is there with his disciples, and they're looking at all of this. And Jesus turns to them and says, "Who do people say that I am?" "Well," they said, "some people say that you're a lot like Moses. Some say you're a lot like Elijah. Some say you're like one of the prophets." And then Jesus turns and says, "But who do you say that I am?" And of course, we get Peter's response. "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." A plus. He passed the test. And immediately then Jesus tells them what that's going to mean. The nature of his being the Christ, the Son of the living God. He says that the Son of Man will be delivered into the hands of the scribes and the elders and the leaders, and they will put him to death. But in three days, he will rise again. Peter didn't much like that, you might recall. He said, no, Jesus, never, not you. That's not who the Son of God is supposed to be. No, not you. Now, 6 days later, Jesus is with his disciples, and he goes up on this incredible mountaintop. Now, you need to know this about the Gospel of Mark. This is the only mountaintop experience recorded in the Gospel of Mark. Not only that, but if you were to take the Gospel of Mark and look directly at the middle of the Gospel of Mark, you find this story. This story is in the direct center, the only mountaintop experience interested. What Mark is trying to tell us is that this is an important story. Jesus goes up onto the mountain with them. He's transfigured in front of them. That's a funny word, transfigured, the Greek word metamorpho, to metamorphosize. He's actually transformed, changed, like a caterpillar becoming a butterfly. He's transfigured, metamorphosized in front of them. And then suddenly you've got Moses and Elijah, the ones that people say that Jesus is, standing there beside him. Obviously, he can't be there because they're right there with him. And they're talking. And amazingly, Jesus is brilliant. They're talking. And I suppose had the disciples had their wits about them, they would have understood, Jesus, the Son of the living God, is the fulfillment of what Moses had talked about and what Elijah the prophet had talked about. He came to fulfill the law and the prophets, which, by the way, is a major part of the Old Testament. He came to fulfill the historical faith of the people who had been yearning for the one who would come and set everything right, the one who would come and fulfill all prophecy. Well, Peter's pretty excited about this. And he starts jabbering away. Jesus, why don't we make three tents? One for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. In other words, why don't we camp out for a while? Why don't we just stay right here on this mountaintop? This is awesome. How good it is that we are here. I don't think we should leave, Jesus. I think this is just cool, awesome. Your glory, your presence, who you are has become so crystal clear to us, Jesus, that we don't want to leave. We just want to stay right here. Now, the text tells us he's saying this because he doesn't know what to say. You ever done that? Said some things that you didn't know. You didn't know what to say, so you just start making words. How's that work out for you? It usually doesn't work out very well for me. I'll tell you that. If I feel like I'm in a setting and if I'm scared or frightened, which it tells us he was, and then you just start making words, it usually doesn't turn out so well. Let's remember the last time Peter started making words. The last time Peter started making words was when he was rebuking Jesus for getting it wrong. No, Jesus, the Son of Man must not suffer and die. I don't know what you're talking about, Jesus. As he's wagging his finger at Jesus, rebuking him. But now when it comes to the glory of Jesus, he might not like the suffering part, but yeah, the glory stuff, wow, absolutely. He couldn't get enough of that. He wanted to camp out and keep enjoying it forever. What you need to understand is that in both accounts, Peter was wrong. Peter was wrong. Because in the first account, Jesus rebukes him, remember? Calling him Satan. Get behind me, Satan. In other words, get behind me because you are opposing the will of God. You're standing in the way of what I have come to do, Peter. Get behind me. And now Peter has spoken again. Again incorrectly. Again saying, hey, let's hang on to the glory as long as we can. And again he's getting rebuked. Only this time from another source. Because immediately after he got it wrong the first time, Jesus rebukes him. Now he's got it wrong again, and we have this voice from heaven immediately come upon the heels of his own words, which says, this is my beloved son, Peter. Listen to him. Listen to him. Listen to him. What is he saying? Well, he's saying he's come to suffer and die. Peter does doesn't want to believe that. He wants to stay on the mountaintop. No, Peter listened to him. And as soon as the transfiguration event started, it comes to an end. They need now to go down the mountain. Go down the mountain, back into the valley, back into where Jesus has called them to be. First time Peter gets rebuked. The second time he gets a revelation. They look around, they see no one but Jesus, and Jesus calls them to go down the mountain, and then Jesus says to them something interesting. He says to them, the next words off his lips, "The Son of Man must suffer many things. He will be handed over to the elders, and he will be killed, and on the third day he will rise again." Interesting. Jesus gives us kind of a bookend, doesn't he? Talking about his suffering, his death, his resurrection. We have this from God saying, listen to him, and then God, Jesus saying it again in chapter 9, that he must suffer, be killed, and be raised. If God were to say, listen to him, what is it he wants us to hear but this talk of suffering, death, and resurrection? You have to understand, Jesus is on a mission. He's on a mission. He left the glories of God's kingdom to come here to earth, and he came on a mission. And if we're willing to listen to him, we will begin to understand what the nature of that mission is. Some people would say, well, Jesus came here to be a good teacher. He came here to show us that we need to love one another, that we need to care for the creation, that we need to care for the world. Now, I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just not saying it's the nature of his mission. He did do those things. He did come to teach. He did come to show us how to love one another. Absolutely. But the core, the nature of his mission was to come to suffer, to be killed, and to be raised. Because you have to understand that when the glory of God comes here, comes from heaven and upon the earth, there are powers and principalities of evil that stand opposed to the glory of God here on earth. And those powers and principalities of evil that are upon the face of the earth stand so against him that death will do everything it can to banish his presence from this earth once and for all. And death did have its day. Jesus was terribly tormented, suffered terribly for a day. But then the glory of God surprised everyone, because Jesus was raised from the dead. And when Jesus was raised from the dead, he rose triumphant over the powers and principalities of evil and over death itself. And all these powers and all these principalities were dismayed when he was resurrected. They were defeated when he was resurrected. They had to surrender their power when he was resurrected. Because when he died, they died with him. And he was then raised to new life. And so he says to his disciples in chapter 8, he says, look, if you're going to follow me, you need to take up your cross and follow me. I want you to be a partaker in my mission. I want you to be a participant. You who've received the benefits of what I have done through my death, suffering, resurrection, you who've received that light into your life, you who've received the life that is abundant and eternal, now you're called to be a follower with me into a world of suffering. And you need to know how counterintuitive that is, because everything in our society screams at us that we ought to find comfort. Comfort at all cost. If you don't have enough food, get better food. If you don't have enough food, supersize it. If you don't have a nice accommodations, well, you can always be upgraded to better accommodations. Your bed isn't soft enough? Here, get one with a thing that you can change the number on. It's all about comfort, people, right? Get more comfort. Be as comfortable as you can. You've only got a short while on this earth. You might as well enjoy and get as much out of life as you can, our society tells us. Jesus says, you've received incredible gifts. You are victors, because now you share in my victory. You, because I have triumphed over death, you have triumphed over death. You see, I vanquished your three greatest enemies, Jesus says, sin, death, and the power of the devil. Without Jesus, how are you doing with your sin, with your guilt and your shame? How are you doing with death and the fear of it? How are you doing with the powers of evil that seem everywhere and all around us? How are you doing? Jesus vanquished these. And now he's calling us to enter with him in mission, to enter into a world of suffering, and to be with him in that suffering, bearing our cross, following him, because he wants the world to be a better place. He wants the world to be a better place because he loves this world and he died for this world. So he says, follow me into this world and make my world a better place. Follow me to your neighbors who are living in despair and give them hope. Follow me into a world where there is so much darkness. Bring the light of my presence and my power to bear upon the darkness of other people. Now, how do we do that? What's our motivation? Where do we find our courage to enter into a world willingly desiring to suffer for the sake of this world that Jesus died and was resurrected for? Where do we find it? I found it at Bible camp. I found it sitting around a campfire where God became real to me. I found it by God showing up and revealing his glory to me there. And you've experienced it too. If not at Bible camp, somewhere else. Some place where God became real for you. See, God has shared his glory with you. You have had a mountaintop experience. You have had that time in which the resurrected power of the Savior, who has set you free from your fear and from your guilt and from your sin, became so real for you that your heart skipped a beat also. And you've experienced what it means to have a victory that is his, now be yours. A triumph over death that is his, that is now yours through faith. But Jesus isn't willing for you to stay on the mountaintop, not very long. He's calling you back into the valley because he has a plan for you, a better plan for you than creating a tent on a mountaintop somewhere. He wants you to enter that valley. He's saying, follow me. Follow me. Come down with me from the mountain. Follow me. And come with me. You can make this world a better place. You can do so. You can help your neighbors who are in need. You can do so. You can share your resources that God has blessed you with and really help other people. You can do so. You can bring your light to bear upon this world in a way that makes a significant difference. You can do so. The disciples, when they were upon the mountain experiencing Jesus, said, "It is so good that we are here." And it was. It was a good thing for them to experience. When I was sitting around that campfire at age 16, I thought the same thing. It was good that I was there. And it was. It was so good. But here's the thing. Jesus is with us today and has so much more in store for us than just that. He calls us down from the mountain of glory into the valleys of pain and brokenness. He calls us to bear our cross. And when we begin to do so, he's the one who comes to us and says, "It is good that you are here. It is good that you are here. Here where you are sharing the message of God's love with other people. Here where you're caring for the needs and resourcing those who are under-resourced in our community. You who are here, who are bringing hope and love to people who are going through such difficulty. You who are here, who are extending God's kingdom to places like Russia and Nicaragua and everywhere else that people are connected in ministry throughout our congregation. Jesus looks at you, First Lutheran today, and says, it is good that you are here. It is good that you are here because this is where you need to be, filled with a sense of my glory, but now called to follow me, bearing your cross, following me into this world. May we do so with courage, may we do so with passion, and may we do so with an ember in our heart, a memory of Jesus being made real to you. A kindred spirit with Jesus as we hold on to that mountaintop experience that we've all had. and now begin to share the glories of that with others. My friends, it is so good that we are here. Amen.